What time is it, you wonder? Well, it's time for Drinks with Tony on KPCR LP Santa Cruz 101.9 FM. Bum ba da bum bum. Sound. Tony Duchesne here. Welcome to episode 131 of Drinks with Tony. My guest is Keith Rawson. Check out his new collection of short stories, Folk Songs for Trauma Surgeons. The pandemic has just been, there's been hard weeks and then there's been harder weeks. On Friday, my friend Adam had a heart attack and he's still in critical condition at the hospital. So, friends and family are really pulling for him. This one's hard because he's like young and good looking and totally takes care of himself. He's like the last guy you'd ever think to have a heart attack. So prayers, healing vibes, you know the drill. If you can put it all, just put a little bit out there for Adam. I can't wait to hear him. I can't wait for him to heal. And I know he'll be utterly disgusted with me for talking about this at the top of the show. I cannot wait for his utter disgust. Fisticuffs, I tell ya. Those are the good times. Anyway, take care of each other. This episode is dedicated to Adam healing up like a champ.
Hi, I'm Keith Rawson, and you are listening to Drinks with Tony. Get on the Drinks with Tony show.
Yeah. You're listening to Drinks with Tony. I'm your host, Tony Duchesne. Today on the show, we have Keith Rawson. He's the author of the novels The Mercy of the Tide and Smoke City. His new book is called Folk Songs for Trauma Surgeons. Keith, how are you doing?
I am hanging in. How are you doing?
The same.
Yeah, right?
It's all about hanging in. What is your secret to hanging in?
You know, right about 3 weeks before the pandemic kind of shut the state down, my partner and I became foster parents of a two and a 3-year-old. Uh-huh. And so we kind of had a trial by fire for the past year plus of like just like a surprise stay-at-home dad, like times 10, you know what I mean? And so it's really just been for me, like we're able to like start, they're able to get out of the house more with more opportunities and stuff with things opening up slightly, but like it's really just like grabbing time when you can, you know what I mean?
Oh, and yeah, and especially that age, they need their fellow they need their kids, their fellow friends to horse around with.
Yeah, totally. So it's just been like for us as parents, just like making sure that we're able to do our own things, even if it's just for a little bit of time a day, you know?
So, yeah.
But yeah, very much a crazy, crazy time, but it's been crazy for everybody, you know?
How did your kids adjust? Did you notice anything?
Yeah. I mean, you know, like foster, like kids who've been through the system are like, they've been through it, you know? And so they're doing amazing. Yeah. But like, I wouldn't, you know, this is hard for everybody. It's especially hard for kids.
Yeah. So
they're stoked to be hanging out with children to some degree again. They start a part-time preschool in about a week after spring break. So they're very excited about it.
And what do preschoolers do for spring break? Do they go to Cancun?
Yeah,
you gotta set them down there.
They're like back home now, but then they've been having like online school, but now they're gonna actually get to go back to school.
Oh wow.
In a week, for a couple hours a day. So that's very cool.
The pandemic is, I think it's just like with kids, it just blows my mind because this is their developing social skills time, right? You know? It's like they gotta be with their people and have their little conflicts. That's mine.
Yeah.
Mine, then they figure it out and then they become adjusted adults or something.
Yeah, we went to the playground last week and my partner and I have been pretty stringent about, like, you know, we've been following protocol pretty hard, you know, but like we went to the playground and there was this girl who whenever my kid got close, she'd just like kick at her, you know.
Ooh.
And it's like, oh, we're all a little feral, you know, we've all gone a little feral. So yeah,
I, you know, and it's like I think even adults are doing that now too.
Absolutely, man. I feel, yes, absolutely. For sure.
Yeah.
You know what's weird is kind of coming out of it. I'm starting to meet people for coffee, and it feels weird. It feels like intimate.
I am so went into a bar to pick up food the other night, and there were people in there, you know, and I'm just like, and I've been vaccinated at this point, you know, and like I'm just still, it's just so weird. I'm so flinchy, you know.
Yeah.
It's such a trip.
Yeah.
And I just didn't think that like kind of social construct would feel so flimsy, you know, but I'm real gun shy.
Yeah. And I mean, I grew up seeing bands all the time. I see you got a Black Flag shirt on, you know, I grew up like just smashed in the pit with just, you know, can't move anywhere, sweat, blood, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just like, that doesn't even seem like it's a reality anymore.
Yeah, totally. I hear you. Yep, for sure.
Yeah, it's you know, I mean, I was doing that into my 40s, which is hilarious. Right. I was still writing music for the San Francisco. I was covering music for the San Francisco Chronicle, so, and lived right in the Tenderloin in San Francisco. So yeah. I was out three nights a week just seeing bands.
Right.
You know, since I was 18.
Yeah. You know, my last show that I saw was just right down the street at this bar called the Kenton Club. Uh-huh. And I just had wandered in, and it was a Clash cover band. And I was just like, the whole night, I was just like, this is so dumb, blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, like kind of mocking it and everything. And this past year, I've just been like, oh my God, I would love to see that show again. You know?
Yeah. So. It's now the best show of 2020.
Yeah, right? Yeah, totally. Yep.
I know. The last band I saw was Sun at the Hollywood Forever Cemetery and that's the first time I ever been to that venue. Mm-hmm. And it was just a barrage of just drone.
Yeah.
And I got a little stoned before, and it was just like perfect stoned. And I was just like, and then I had to do a bunch of traveling, and I had to put, you know, I had all these tickets I had Swans, Einstürzende Neubauten tickets in like three different cities set up for 2020.
Right.
Sun was the last gig.
Yeah, totally. Yep.
Did you grow up in Portland?
You know, I grew up in Newport, Oregon, which is a little coastal town. Mm-hmm. It's a big, big tourist town, fishing town. Where they filmed, or where Free Willy, the orca, went to live after the filming of that show was done. That was our big claim to fame for a while. And then I moved to Portland when I was in my early 20s. So I've been here like 20 plus years.
So. It's funny. I grew up in a small suburb of the Bay Area. Mm. And then the minute I could, I moved to San Francisco.
Yeah, right. Yep.
I don't know what it is about being like near a city and then just that drive to have to be in the middle of it.
Yeah. You know, it's weird too, because like Robin, my partner, and I, we go back to Newport and to the little coastal towns that dot it. And I would just love it, you know, like I miss it so much, which is such a weird pain in the ass, you know what I mean, to be like, I wanted to leave here so bad.
Yeah.
And now it's like, you know, nice, like folks are nice, and it's like I miss the beach so bad, you know. So yeah, it's a interesting little turnaround there.
Yeah, it's so weird as we get older. I know. Right. I was thinking about it, I was just like, oh, you know, I want to go back to Millbrae, because I just haven't been there. And even when I lived in San Francisco, there's no reason to go 20 minutes out to the suburb, you know? And
yeah, totally.
Yep. Now it's just, it would be like, you know, everything that I grew up was gone, the bowling alleys and the sad diners, but you know.
Right. I feel a lot of the same way with Newport, my little town. Like a lot of its like charm has been replaced with like a veneer of a lot of new money, like retirement money and stuff like that, you know, and everything's just a lot more slick, you know, but the beach is still there. And that's a big one for me. So,
well, you may be retiring there in a couple decades yourself, right?
Yeah. Right.
If it's, you'll be the one where everyone's like, oh, this damn retirement money's coming in.
Yeah.
Oh, gee.
Yeah, totally. Yep.
When did you start writing?
You know, I started writing punk zines when I was a teenager. And so like, you know, I did a vow.
Yeah.
Started it when I was 19, I think.
Yeah.
And did that for a decade, did like 24, 25 issues, wrote for a bunch of other fanzines, and then have always been like a voracious reader of fiction. And so started, like, I'd written a number of just wretched novels as like a young man, you know? But around 30, I started getting a little bit more serious with writing short fiction and sending it out. And so I started to get some publication credits. And I think my first book was that was published was The Mercy of the Tide. And I think I had written like 3 books before that that just didn't bring me there. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah. It's how we do it. Right. People go, how do you learn how to write a novel? You write a novel and that novel's usually going to suck, but that's how you learn.
Yep.
It's, you just have to jump right into the water, you know, the deep end and pray it doesn't get published because it's terrible.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And that's one of the big, like, I've been doing a lot of podcasts recently, like 4 folk songs and a lot of cool, like, classes. And I keep getting asked, like, what would you do? Like, what kind of advice or whatever would you offer? And the thing I keep coming back to is totally in line with that. And it's just like giving yourself permission to write a shitty first draft, you know?
Yeah.
Because like if we just obsess over the first 10 pages of a thing and they got to just be perfect before you can move forward, it's never going to be done, you know?
So. Yeah. It's almost like give yourself permission to be messy.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And it'll be like, once you finish the thing and have a draft that informs how your characters act, you'll know more about them. And so that will inform how they act at the beginning in a way that you didn't really know them at first. You know what I mean? So you just got to finish it.
It's almost like you got to develop a relationship with the character. And the only way to do that is to just write the whole thing.
That's exactly how I feel. Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's so much fun. Yeah. I like that. Cause not only from the first 10 pages to the end of the book, you're a better writer by the time you get to the end of the book, you're a better writer and you've spent time with the character. So those first 10 pages are going to change because now the characters made their choices, you know?
Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah. And it's like, oh, he wouldn't even say this. He would say this, or he would react this way, or these two people would do this when faced with each other, you know?
Yeah.
You're learning as you go, you know?
And that's the sexiest part of all of this. I really love you get to know your characters.
Right.
Who else has a job where they do that? Where they just, they go, I want to create people. And then they do their thing and you're like, oh, they do that.
Right. Yeah. It's cool. When it goes well, it's cool.
Yeah.
When it's a struggle, it's like the weirdest, weirdest difficulty imaginable when you're stuck, you know, but when it's going well, it's, there's nothing else like it.
Yeah. That's why we joined this club.
Mm-hmm.
I love that you started with zines. That's right. I have your anthology of the about zines.
Right.
And I think some people wait for permission. Like they'll try to submit before doing their own thing. They'll just be like, oh, I need to get in the Atlantic. That'll mean I'm a writer. So they'll keep trying to get that way. But to just throw a zine together of what you're passionate about and get it out there,
right?
That creates a better writer, and also people actually dig it. It's,
You know, that's such a, like, I've never thought of it that way, but like I can see myself as a young writer, young fiction writer. I could see, that need for validation. You know, I had a lot of that. And I still get trapped up in that stuff for sure. That sense of like validity, like I'll be a writer's writer when I land a piece here or when this happens, you know? And it's like, that is, as somebody with numerous books out who still struggles with imposter syndrome all the time, that is such a weird, nefarious little brain twist, you know, but it's so real.
Yeah. It blows my mind. I've you know, I've interviewed authors who've been on the bestseller list for 20 books on the New York Times bestseller list.
Right.
And they all have imposter syndrome when they start a new draft. And it's just, yeah. It's like, thank you for telling me that.
It's that same terror every time of like, I'm not going to be able to do it this time.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Totally.
And then you got to play with your mind and do the, I got to do weird mind tricks where, you know, I used to be a lot more grandiose with my delusions, you know, before I was published. Now I'm just like, now I'm like, oh, this might get published and someone might read it. And my, in the olden days, it was like, this will get published. It'll be turned into a film. I'll get the Oscar for best, you know, that now those delusions are gone. Cause I know how that
works. Totally. Yeah.
Now I'm just like, I hope somebody reads this.
Right. Yep.
What was it like as a writer in Portland? Because I feel like Portland's got a great like literary scene, really from the outside. I haven't been, so.
Yeah, you know, I'm part of a really cool writers group here. We have been struggling a bit with, you know, getting together with the pandemic, but we're still meeting like, you know, on Zoom and all that stuff. And yeah, there's a ton of writers here. I feel like it's kind of focused a bit on the literary scene. But I think there's like all genres of folks are represented here. You know what I mean? I don't go to as many, or at least I didn't go to as many readings as I might've wanted to. And I'm sure as hell not going to, even online stuff now, like with kids, it's a pretty like, it's kind of a full-time job. So, but yeah, there's some incredible, incredible writers here and it's pretty tight knit, you know?
Yeah. And I remember finding out that, Chuck Palahniuk lived near Portland. I never knew where.
Right.
It's a big secret in what suburb he's in, unless everyone in Portland knows. I don't know.
I have no idea. Yeah.
It's like LA because I'm in Los Angeles now. I was like, when I first came down here, I was like standing at a cafe talking to a dude and John C. Reilly was walking toward me. You know that actor?
Yeah.
And it just blew my mind. I was like, oh, shit. And he saw my mind blown. So his eyes like averted from me. Like I was.
Right. About to make a scene or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was like, oh, yeah. Okay. He doesn't know me. I get it. That's
why right.
Yep. I was just trying to pretend like I was having a conversation. Utterly like aware that he was walking right by me.
Right.
I told one of my friends who lives down here, I was like, oh my God, you're not going to believe this. John C. Reilly walked by me when I was at the cafe was called Chango. When I was at Chango, he's like, oh yeah, he's got a house right near there. I'm just like, wait, what? It was nothing.
Right.
They just all know where they're at. So I'm trying to figure out, is that the same in Portland? Does everyone know where Chuck Palahniuk lives and they're just not telling?
Yeah. Them? You know, I don't really like, I'm trying to think of like an author that would walk by and I'd be like, holy shit. Oh my God. And I'm drawing a blank. Like there are writers that I love, you know, but it would be weird to like, kind of like just knowing like what writing is like and how lonely it can be and all that, you know, like ascribing like a larger status to them, you know, like, oh man, you write shitty drafts just like I do, don't you?
Yeah.
You
know? Exactly. Yeah. It's almost like the Wizard of Oz. We're seeing behind the curtain, right?
Right.
Behind, you see when I used to think that, you know, everyone, when I read a book, I just assumed it was the first draft of
writing. Right. Totally.
Like even on the road, Jack Kerouac, and they kind of tout it like, oh, it was the first draft. No, that was many drafts later.
Right.
You know, but it's just, and then you think, oh yeah, I could just write like that and then it'll be done.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there are tons of writers that if I like saw them at a book signing or a panel or something, I'd be like wholeheartedly like gushing about how great their stuff is. You know what I mean?
But yeah. And you'll remember, go ahead.
Oh, I think I've surpassed the point where I'm like, it's kind of a mundane celebrity sort of thing for me. You know what I mean? Yeah. So
it's weird. Have you had people come up to you and go, oh man, and just kind of like gush over your work, where you're just kind of like, whoa, what, yeah, you're better than me. Why are you talking?
Right. Well, there's been some folks that are like kind of peruse my stuff like pretty avidly. And so they know a lot of stuff about like what I've written or whatever, like almost more than I, you know, like I've kind of forgotten about it a bit.
Yeah.
So that's always like very cool. And also like, I'm like, my shit's not that rad, you know, like that imposter syndrome comes up again.
Yeah.
So, but like, just, I mean, anyone who like buys a book or like, you know, wants it signed or like sends an email, you know, like it's just, I just feel so lucky, because like when you think of it, we're pulling this out of nothing, you know, it's coming from nothing. And so to have somebody like appreciate it, it feels pretty profound.
Yeah, when I used to teach novel writing classes, one of the first assignments was they had to write a letter to their favorite novelist.
Right.
Just a fan letter, and no expectations, just mm-hmm. gush over what they liked and thank them for the book.
Totally.
And so the kids would write letters, and they would get like responses, and their mind mm-hmm. was blown. I'm like,
yeah,
man, these people are not getting a lot of compliments because we right. read the work. We're not sending notes to everyone we read, and it just yeah. blew their mind how accessible,
right,
writers are,
and how like I've certainly gotten those at like dark times or like profoundly insecure times, and it's been a boost, you know? So.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I know. There's been times where I'm like, I've made the worst decisions in my life. Why have I done this? And then I'll get a note of someone who comments on my book or the film and what it did for them. And I'm just like, kind of like, oh yeah. Okay. I used to really care about what it did for people. I don't care so much anymore, but I care that that it means something, I guess, a bit.
Right, right.
Yeah, I don't know what.
Yeah.
It shifted.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted the message to get out. I didn't care about the message anymore. I just cared that it changed them.
Yeah, I feel like, I mean, somebody asked like what my ideal reader is, and I'm just like, I have no idea. Like, I mostly write this stuff because I think it's, I get enjoyment out of it. And so I guess my ideal reader is whoever is into this weird mishmash of literary and genre stuff. You know what I mean? Like, that's it. And that's like a pretty wide, hopefully a wide reaching group of people. So.
Yeah. Did you take writing classes or
do you? You know, I was in like the like upper echelon creative writing thing in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I went to art school, we had to do placement tests, and I landed in the second lowest English comprehension class because I had no understanding of like basic grammar or like parts of speech or any of that. And I still don't really like, Robin talked about a prefix or a prefix a couple days ago, and I don't know what a prefix is, you know what I mean? Like that very basic boots on the ground level of English, like it's still, I know it kind of innately and subconsciously, but like defining parts of speech in a sentence, like I could not do that. I could not diagram that. And so all of this has just mostly been like writing groups and just knuckling down and writing. So
I think grammar can get in the way. Grammar can get in the way of the creative process.
Yeah. I mean, I am profoundly grateful for editors who have fixed my books. Cause it looks like a bloodbath, every manuscript, you know, but they fix it. You know what I mean? Yeah. And like, there's somewhere for continuity's sake. I don't want this cause it's going to come into play later. I don't want, this needs to be like this, but 9 times out of 10, they catch shit that I had no idea was wrong. You know?
Yeah. So. Oh man. But I used to think that authors always stood up, you know, back when I was young, and like, you gotta be like, authors stand up to their editors and say,
right,
no, it's gotta be this way or no way at all. And then I started like, you know, I started Drinks with Tony and started interviewing writers, you know, 20 years ago. And I was like, so what's it like working with your editor, expecting all this like fire and oh yeah, they, I told them that they can just shove right. it up there, you know, and yeah. they're like, oh, I take every note they give me and they're usually right. And it yeah. blew my mind that that's how it works. But that's right. what great editors do. They're yeah, they're in that part, you know?
And just like I am, I'm working on a revision of this novel right now. And I had a beta reader tackle it, which I don't think I've ever had a beta reader before, but this was just not, it was okay, you know? But so he read it and he offered the most profound, helpful, incredible notes on like both big picture and specifics. And I'm like, they open windows that we can't open as writers, you know? And it's like, that ain't confrontational. That's like, thank you very much.
Yeah.
You know?
It's about serving the story on every level.
Right. And I'm like, I'm lucky to have people like that in my life that can do that, you know,
yeah.
and who are so whip smart that they can do it well.
Yeah. It's so much fun. Like workshopping, I've noticed, you know, especially when people start taking classes here and there and they're so timid with workshopping and they'll take offense at everything. But once you really get into it, you're not taking offense. You're like, hit me harder. It's almost like you're in a boxing, like, you know, you're like getting ready for the big fight. You're just like, you got to like throw your whole punch at me so I know how to take a punch.
Kind right. of. And like so much of that too is just like understanding, like you don't have to take every bit of it like yeah. with that, you know what I mean? Like in a workshop, because that's like however many people in a workshop, you don't necessarily, they aren't necessarily your trusted friends or your editor.
Right.
Other people have agendas, that sort of shit, you know? But like you can take what you want and leave the rest, like that's not a big deal. But yeah, with like editors, like I lend a lot of credence to what editors say, because it's not meant to be unhelpful, you know what I mean? It's supposed
yeah.
to be like dragging your story out of the muck. So
they're almost like music producers, where you know you come up with the song or totally. whatever, then you go into studio and you got a you got the engineer and the
right
and they're part of the whole package. We never totally. See them. We don't know who the engineer was on, you know, the certain records or whatever,
right.
but they are a part of the band in a certain
totally way. Yep, agreed.
Yeah, I'm glad we agree on that, because this has just been a disagreeable conversation.
Absolutely. Jesus God.
Wait till we go to the bars again.
That's right.
I don't even know if I want to go to a bar again.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
I'm definitely looking. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I don't know. Once the flinchy phase is over, if it ever is for me, like I look forward to that, to fellowship again of some kind, you know.
This is going to affect us so much, even like 10, 15 years from now. Everything's just shifted, you know, where
yeah.
just. You know, as the new teenagers kind of grow up and they're just like, yeah, what are you guys talking about, you weirdos? You're mm-hmm. scared of this? This is just normal life. And we're like,
right. still. Yeah, totally. Yeah. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how things change, you know,
yeah,
over time.
Like I was thinking about it. Like, remember when 9/11 happened and then airport security just got tight? And how much it sucked, mm-hmm. you know, and then now it's just routine.
Right.
You know, the TSA check, take all your clothes off, spread your butt cheeks. They say,
yeah.
look, sir, there's kids in line here. Can you not spread your butt cheeks right. here?
Yeah. And, but, yeah.
But we're used to it. We're taking our shoes off.
Right.
Before 9/11, if someone asks you to take your shoes off, you kick them in the balls.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a trip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what,
yeah, like mask stuff and like stuff like that. Like I imagine a lot of people, that's just going to be a permanent avenue they go down, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a trip.
I'm looking at people's eyes so much more. I'm trying to communicate with eyes a lot more.
Yeah. Trying to acknowledge like, hi, I'm smiling, but like, how do I do that?
Yeah. On. Yeah. Just, yeah. I was talking to someone, I think it was a dude at a grocery store who's working there. And I was asking him, you know, can you tell if people are smiling or something? He's like, yeah, I could tell. I could tell by looking at their eyes, their facial expressions.
Oh, yeah. Right on.
The grocery store clerks are the new rock stars of.
Yeah, man. It's rough. It's rough. The whole. Yeah, it's rough.
Yeah. I'm just like, thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Thankless job to begin with a lot of times, and like a lot catch a lot of the brunt of people's shittiness, you know, and how to make it like a potentially lethal position on top of that, you know.
I know. Yeah. Blows my mind. I know I'm getting my second vaccine in a few weeks and I can't wait. I never thought in my life I would say that out loud.
Right. It the second one, it knocked me and my partner out for a bit. It was pretty gnarly, but like, hey, here we are.
Here we are. Yeah. Flinching less in public situations.
Yeah, for sure. Yep.
Keith, man, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, thank you. For sure. Yeah.
Keith Rawson on Drinks with Tony. Check out his new book, Folk Songs for Trauma Surgeons. Next week on the show, we have Jordan A. Rothacker discussing his new book, The Death of the Cyborg Oracle. Have you noticed many times on the show we don't even discuss the books? Why do I pretend that that's going to be the discussion next week? We'll probably talk about something like how to prevent glaucoma. But in the end, I hope you enjoy these conversations and check out the books by the authors on this show. What are you doing next week? I mean, other than listening to the next episode of Drinks with Tony. Have a great weekend. Thanks for listening to Drinks with Tony. You are on your radio dial at 101.9 FM KPCR LP Santa Cruz.